The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Advertising Corporation and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found in his Washington Times Communities column, Forbidden Table Talk.
It's time now for The Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you get tired of Christians talking as if their religious freedoms are under assault. Well, my friend, I get tired of it too. I get tired of talking about it, but there's a reason for the discussion. The reason is our religious freedoms are under assault. Now, that doesn't mean God isn't on his throne. God can always be trusted. But although God can always be trusted, our constitutional freedom to worship this same God and obey this same God hangs in the balance. If a recent decision by Obama appointee Sonia Sotomayor is any indicator, our near future may see a First Amendment no longer worth the paper it's printed on. We'll take a closer look at this controversy in just a few minutes. We also have two special guests today. I know you're going to enjoy them. Nancy Reed and Lisa Smith of Big Blend Magazine and Radio. They do fantastic things with our national parks. If you love places like Yosemite, if you love places like Yellowstone, Crater Lake, you're really going to enjoy this second half of our program. First, a happy new year to everyone. It's good to be back with you after a two-week break. In my absence, we aired one repeat and had one guest host. Last week, Kevin Conover took my place, and he did a tremendous job. But I'm glad to be back for the commencement of our ninth season. The Bob Siegel Show has been on the air 8 years, and today we begin our ninth. But before we begin, I want to revisit a moment from the last show of our eighth season, last week's program. Once again, my friend Kevin Conover was guest hosting. He interviewed, it was a very interesting interview. You can go to my website and download it. An ex-evolutionist turned Christian and an ex-Catholic turned agnostic named Sandy Hewlett, an astronomy professor in the Department of Physics and Astronomy at Saddleback College. Kevin wanted the show to be cordial and polite despite any disagreements, and it was, for the most part, cordial and polite. Until the end. Notice how Miss Hewlett responds to a comment from Kevin.
Well, and I actually want to add one more last thing here. We got a couple minutes here. And that is that, you know, Sandy, you started off by saying, I'm an agnostic, I'm looking for the evidence and so forth. The position I'm in, too, is that I cannot definitively say God is real because I don't know all there is to know. But what I can say is that by far the existence of God and the worldview put forth in the Bible is the most plausible, that makes sense of all the pieces. Well, this is interesting way to end the show. But anyway, Sandy, thank you very much for being on the show. Carrie, thank you very much for being on the show. And I think we'll wrap it up there.
Okay. First of all, my congratulations to Kevin for his gracious response. He definitely took the high ground. And maybe he's a better man than me. But frankly, I did not want to let this go without any comment. This was one of the rudest, most arrogant responses I have ever heard. Now, I do want to be fair. For most of the program, Sandy Hewlett behaved politely. And maybe she was just having a bad moment, but the moment did not acquit her well. I've had many friendly discussions with atheists and agnostics on this program, in other places, both formally and informally. Generally, disagreements and debates can take place with mutual respect. But for those who feel that Christianity is something that should be laughed at, I do want to point out that during the program, Kevin and his other guest challenged many of Sandy's ideas. Never once did she refute a word they said, at least not with any actual fact. Miss Hewlett, if you can't answer with facts, perhaps answering with laughter is not the best response either. You're better than that. Oh, well, I will stand by her right to express herself, rude as she may have been. Unfortunately, not as many are standing up for the rights of Christians these days. Our constitutional freedoms are under assault from this current administration. Now, Obama's apathy for our governing document was already exemplified before the election, with an end run around welfare and immigration laws passed or upheld by the other branches of government. Any man willing to do this while running for re-election probably sees himself as unstoppable. Now, even when the separation of powers throws a decision toward our judicial branch, the fine hand of Obama seems more omnipresent than God himself. Supreme Court Justice Sonia Sotomayor has refused to block part of the new federal health care law, which forces companies to provide insurance coverage for contraceptives, including the controversial morning-after pill, which raises abortion-related concerns with religious organizations who believe that's wrong, who believe it's morally wrong, who believe they have to disobey their faith to go along with it. Sotomayor was responding to Hobby Lobby Stores and sister company Mardell Incorporated, who recently sued the government, claiming the new law violates their religious freedom. Ironically, in a previous case from years ago, Sotomayor ruled in favor of a Muslim inmate who was denied Ramadan meals, claiming that judges did not hold, quote-unquote, the aptitude to pass upon the question of whether particular religious beliefs are wrong or right. Well, that was an intelligent thing to say. Unfortunately, she's not applying that anymore. Now, some might argue that President Obama is not responsible for the decisions of a judge he appointed, but anyone who thinks our president is bypassing liberal justices in favor of strict constructionists has not been paying attention. Even before her appointment to the Supreme Court, Sonia Sotomayor had demonstrated her objectivity in a 2001 law school speech at Cal Berkeley, where she said, and I quote, "I would hope that a wise Latina woman with the richness of her experiences would more often than not reach a better conclusion than a white male who hasn't lived that life." Okay, if that statement bears any resemblance to an honest approach toward the Constitution, then our founding fathers once wrote a love letter to King George. But we should not be surprised to see such similarity between Obama's appointed judges and current White House policy. Indeed, one wonders if Sotomayor's well-known record of preferential treatment of a Muslim prisoner was part of her appeal when she was selected by the same administration that apologizes to the Muslim world for an offensive video after they attack our embassies and then goes an extra mile by locking up the director and denying his First Amendment freedom. All right, now look, I'm not suggesting any of these observations are a cue for stupid conspiracy theories about Obama being a secret Muslim. For him, the matter seems far simpler. It is politically correct to be tolerant of a religion that spawns anti-American terrorists, and politically inconvenient to protect a different religion, Christianity, which challenges affordable health care for all. Have you been looking at your premiums for this affordable health care lately? I have. Any genuine religious conviction from our president would have to be observed elsewhere, perhaps in his own mirror, where he undoubtedly bows each morning to the one deity he can worship with unbridled enthusiasm. But beware, Mr. President, someday when history has passed away and all of us find ourselves before the judgment seat of the real God, you will give an account for every word, every action, and every policy. Candy Crawley will not be standing next to you to bail you out. Sonia Sotomayor will not rule your excuse to God to be constitutional. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
Hey, this is Lori K. Lewis, a frequent co-host on The Bob Siegel Show, Talk Radio 1170 on KCBQ. If you have questions or comments during this radio broadcast, please call Bob at this toll-free number, 1-888-344-1170. Again, the number is 1-888-344-1170. We'd like to hear what you have to say.
Back to the Bob Siegel Show. As so many of us return to work after a pleasant Christmas holiday, we do need to take a moment and remember that for many in Newtown, Connecticut, this Christmas season was horrific. Nothing can adequately explain the horror of 20 children and 6 adults killed by Adam Lanza at Sandy Hook Elementary School. It was every parent's worst nightmare, and it left a shocked country seeking answers and guarantees against future violence. It must be possible to prevent this kind of tragedy from ever happening again, mustn't it? Every solution but the kitchen sink has been floated, from the obvious demands for gun control to calls for improvements to mental health care delivery. One of the earliest voices came from President Obama himself on the day of the tragedy. We're going to have to come together and take meaningful action to prevent more tragedies like this, regardless of the politics. You know something? Nothing sounds more political than a politician telling us it's time to leave politics behind. Obama's record reveals an interesting definition of non-political bipartisanship. You see, if Republicans would do things exactly his way, then at long last the country could benefit from two parties working together. Obama's comments were obvious code for expanded gun control laws, which must be enacted whether Republicans like it or not. After Obama dropped his hints, Senator Dianne Feinstein spoke more clearly. She said, I'm going to introduce in the Senate, and the same bill will be introduced in the House, a bill to ban assault weapons. She explained that on NBC's Meet the Press. Then Obama weighed in again with a press conference, eliminating all speculation about what he meant in his first speech. He has tasked Vice President Joe Biden to lead an interagency task force to produce concrete proposals that will end the plague of gun violence. Yeah. See, Obama's going to end it. The plague of gun violence, it's over. Obama and his crack staff, they're on it, folks. These proposals will include assault weapons bans and a ban on high-capacity magazines. He expects the task force proposals by the end of January. Well, we'll be looking forward to that. And then he will press Congress to vote on a bill without delay. Folks, knee-jerk reactions for gun control always sound soothing until we realize that gun restrictions will only limit the number of weapons law-abiding citizens are allowed to carry under the protection of the Second Amendment. Picture, if you will, some would-be assassin contemplating a new mass shooting. I want to commit mass murder in cold blood, but heck! The kind of weapon I wanted to use is against the law. I've got to obey the law, so gosh, I guess the murder is off. Now, questions about mental health and better treatment make at least a little more sense than gun control discussion. Early reports are that Newtown killer Adam Lanza was autistic and had grown increasingly withdrawn. A certain Priscilla Brailsforth, a Georgetown University medical psychologist, says, we wait for things like this to happen, and then everyone talks about mental health. But people, even this explanation warrants caution. If Lanza had not killed himself, what would be happening? Oh, I think we all know what would be happening. Some hotshot lawyer would be going for his 7 minutes of fame, trying to get Lanza off by insisting the man was not responsible for his own actions. Not responsible, huh? Then why did he kill himself? Simple question, why did he kill himself? Inasmuch as Lanza took his own life, we can assume he knew exactly what he was doing and chose not to be caught and held accountable. A simpler explanation is rejected by far too many, so try this out for size. Maybe, just maybe, Adam Lanza committed evil B. Because he was evil. But good luck explaining that to a culture which embraces moral relativism and rejects the kind of God who would send people to hell. Maybe we've been too quick to dismiss the obvious. Lanza is not the first killer to escape justice. Adolf Hitler managed to avoid capture and accountability from the Allies by taking a cyanide capsule. Supposing Hitler's next conscious moment was the judgment seat of God, where he answered for his crimes and eventually paid in hell forever. All at once, hell looks like less of a horrible doctrine and more of a comfort. It provides a sense of justice sadly lacking from anti-gun bills and psychological explanations. It would be nice to live in a world without evil. Since we don't, let us at least call evil for what it is and put our hope in a God who deals with it. This is Bob Siegel, making the obvious obvious. Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785, that's 447-8785, for W&S Electric, Incorporated, license number 480-539, W&S Electric. Welcome back to our program. If you'd like to weigh in on any of this, of course, you can always reach us by phone, but many people through the internet these days, questions@bobsiegel.net. That's questions@bobsiegel, S-I-E-G-E-L.net. And of course, on Facebook, Twitter. And this is regarding Obama and his religious freedom. Bella, religious freedom, quote unquote, I should say. Bella writes, supposedly Muslims are exempt from the law. They were allegedly issued waivers. If that is true, then the government set itself up for discrimination against other religions. But hey, it's Obama, so it is all okay, right? Right. And there's a lot of eyes in that right. Now, this fellow calls himself Passerby. He's responds. Sometimes I wish people like Passerby would just pass by, but I'll read his comment. He's responding to my column that corresponds with today's monologue, and he writes, Siegel addresses the president. But beware, Mr. President, someday when history has passed away and all of us find ourselves before the judgment seat of the real God, you will give an account for every word, every action, and every policy. It's always amusing to read the words of insignificance who are so deluded as to think that the president would actually read or even care about what they have to say in an inconsequential venue such as Washington Times Communities, especially a ridiculous warning about some judgment seat that exists only in the beliefs of deluded minds. Those were the words of Passerby. No kidding, Passerby? The president isn't actually going to read this article? Wow! Thank you for pointing that out. I had no idea. Yes, writers are aware that the president does not read their articles. It was a literary device when I addressed him. I think 99.9% of the people recognize that. But Passerby, As for the judgment seat of God taking place only in delusional minds, you are welcome to defend that statement, which happens to be void of any facts, but you're welcome to defend it on my radio show with me at any time. I enjoy debating people like you. The invitation is a sincere one, but I won't be holding my breath. Regarding gun control, John, responding to my online column, says, a very well-written, thought-out, and humorous article. Bravo. I wish more reporters would look at things with such a clear, non-biased perspective. Well, thank you, John. I appreciate the encouraging words. Our friend Peter from Maine writes, far more people are murdered every year with handguns as opposed to the so-called assault weapons, but that didn't turn out to be what they could get the most political mileage out of in the most recent CT school tragedy. So now the debate is focused on so-called assault rifles. And if you really want to talk about protecting young innocent lives, we could talk about the millions of unborn children killed every year by Planned Parenthood. But I suspect you would just accuse me of changing the subject. Take care, Bob, and have a great new year. Well, thank you, my friend. Christine says, only way gun control would work is if the government goes to every residence in the nation and takes the banned guns, which would result in civil unrest and quite possibly another civil war. Marty says, treat all guns exactly like cars, license, inspect, register, certify, etc. The Second Amendment is a fetish advanced by the gun industry. Well, I'm not sure about that, Marty. Then he says, you may keep and bear all the muzzle-loading blunderbusses and flintlock pistols that your well-regulated militia requires. Woo! There's a mouthful. And now, truth tell. So I'm always suspicious if somebody has the word truth in his name because, well, it's not usually truth that he defends. But anyway, he says, gun control would not have prevented it, but mental health care may well very well have prevented not only this event, but all the others too. It would help a lot to ban the most powerful drug called religion, too. I have a dream. One day there will be a perfect world without stupid people and religious dimwits. These are the people that are always giving us lectures on tolerance and telling us to be more open-minded. Sir, your ignorance is matched only by your arrogance. First of all, theists offer evidence for their beliefs. You offer nothing except the emotional rhetoric you would accuse religious people of. And your moral compass seems a bit damaged. And as much as those who first spoke against slavery in America were Christian abolitionists, and in as much as godless secular governments like the Nazis, like Stalin's Russia, have wreaked havoc on the planet, perhaps we should dream of a world with more religion, not all religions, not any religions, but religions that prove themselves with facts and morals. Now, Linda's very upset with me. She writes, your answer is to label them after the fact as evil and seek God to damn them to the everlasting fires of hell. I don't know if there are fires in hell, Linda, so don't put words in my mouth. There is a place called hell. Anyway, whether there's fire, that's another discussion for another time. But she says everlasting fires of hell versus identifying them as deeply disturbed and capable of getting and receiving treatment before the fact. Your politically focused response appears to excuse you from taking responsible action for other people's well-being. No gun control needed, no mental health needed, just eternal damnation. You write not from a position of knowledge of the issues of mental health, but rather from a defensive, conservative viewpoint. You are not seeking a solution. You're looking for an excuse to not participate in a vital change for the good of all persons involved. And I find that disgusting. Well, thank you for your comment, Linda. Let me tell you what I find disgusting. Somebody who challenges a writer to take responsibility, but doesn't seem to think that a killer needs to take responsibility for evil. We already have plenty of gun control laws in place. How are they working out, Linda? And I do not oppose health care. I merely point out that there is also such a thing as evil. As a pastor, I've done much with people to heal emotional hurts. As for accountability, when these jaspers get caught, people like yourself always want to let them off by reason of insanity. How's that accountability? Don't lecture me about accountability. I'm happy to give them the death penalty. But if they kill themselves before they have a chance to be brought to justice, well, I'm just glad that they are standing before the throne of God. We will be back, everybody, with Nancy Reed and Lisa Smith, wildlife experts. You're not going to want to miss this interview. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
your kids ask you questions about God and the Bible that you can't answer? Sign yourself or your child up for a class with lots of solid answers at educateforlife.org before someone else gives them the wrong answers. Are you tired of not knowing what to say when your friends and family ask you questions about God and the Bible? Get equipped by signing up for a class at educateforlife.org. When someone asks you, "How do you know the Bible's true?" do you say something like, "I just know it is"? If you're tired of giving lame answers, sign up for a class at educateforlife.org. When someone says that God isn't real, wouldn't it be fun to prove that He is, quickly, like a verbal ninja? By using science and logic. Sign up for a class at educateforlife.org with Christian apologetics teacher Kevin Conover, and you'll learn how to do that. educateforlife.org. If you enjoy listening to The Bob Siegel Show, check out Bob's weekly column for Washington Times Communities. Bob is also a regular contributor for San Diego Rostra and San Diego Newsroom. And don't forget his website, www.bobsiegel.net, S-I-E-G-E-L, bobsiegel.net. Here, you can download past radio shows, read Bob's many articles about Christianity, and get information about Bob's books. That's www.bobsiegel.net.
To KCBQ 1170. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. I'm really excited about our guests, Nancy J. Reed and Lisa D. Smith, our owners and operators of Big Blend Magazines, which is also related to Big Blend Radio. They'll explain that connection to you. They are also a mother and daughter team that started working together for over 20 years ago. I don't think some people could work with their own mother for even a month. So 20 years, this will be interesting. It all began when Nancy, a successful wildlife artist, writer, and photographer, led tours from Los Angeles to Kenya, East Africa. And this ultimately led to her moving to Kenya, bringing a young 1.5-year-old Lisa along and working out in the field for writer and conservationist Joy Adamson, who everybody realizes, the author of Born Free, best-selling novel, also became a hit movie, also became a hit song. Nancy and Lisa presently have a fascinating goal to visit each of the national parks by the end of the National Park Centennial on August 25th, 2017. During these visits, they will be hosting live on location Big Blend radio broadcasts from the National Park Gateway communities, as well as producing videos for Big Blend TV, editorial pieces, and radio shows for each of Big Blend's 10 online radio and video magazines. Nancy Reed and Lisa Smith, welcome to our program.
Thank you. Bob, thanks for having us on the show.
Oh, I'm excited to have you. Now, who am I hearing right now, Nancy or Lisa?
That was Lisa.
Okay. Well, it's great having both of you. This is very interesting that you're a mother-daughter team. Well, let's start with the mother, as well we should. Now, Nancy, obviously, I don't think I've ever met anybody that doesn't have some kind of interest in the outdoors. I remember the thrill I had when I went camping for the very first time as a kid. But obviously, it's a much more obsessive thrill for you. So what created your interest in wildlife and the outdoors to the point where you knew you wanted to make a career out of it?
Wow. I guess as a child, I came from a kind of a dysfunctional, disruptive childhood, and my best friend was my dog.
And, boy, you know, that is so common these days. It's almost like the dysfunctional childhood was the normal childhood in the culture that we're living in. That's so sad.
But, just the dog was always there for me, and I started drawing pictures of the dog, and then it just graduated from there to animals in the zoo, and then I had this idea that maybe animals in the zoo weren't all that happy and I needed to go out in the field and see them. So as soon as I could get away from my family and do what I wanted to do, that's what I did.
Now, how old were you at that time when you finally got away?
I was 21.
21, okay. And were you in college majoring in zoology, or did you skip school and just head right out?
I headed right on out to work. I did take some college classes, mostly, it's funny, music and anthropology.
Music and anthropology, both. That's an interesting combination. So what was your very first job working with animals? Was it at a zoo, or where was it?
I was actually in California. I took care of some of Tippi Hedren's lions while she was filming Roar and other little movies. I don't like to talk about her because I don't like her.
Oh, okay. Well,
I'm dying to find out why, but
I guess we don't have to go there.
Yeah, I just didn't like how she kept the animals.
Oh, yeah. I see. So you were attracted to what she did, but then you didn't like the way she was doing it.
So I took care of, I think I had 4 lion cubs and 2 tigers.
Wow. Now, did you continue a relationship with these lions and tigers after they became full grown?
No.
No. Okay.
No, I cared for them for a while. She had a sickness in her camp, and so I took over the cubs so that they wouldn't get the same sickness. And as soon as her illness passed on, I returned the cubs.
Okay, and then what was your next job? Where did you move on to from there?
After that, I took care of some reindeer.
Some reindeer. Wow.
Yeah, that was fun too. And
I don't think most people know that reindeer exists when it isn't Christmas season. They think they magically appear at the North Pole.
These were actually fallow deer that some guy had that painted them up as one was Rudolph and the rest were regular reindeer. And they used them in shopping malls during Christmas time.
Oh, my gosh. The poor reindeer must have driven them nuts.
Yeah, and he left them in the desert in a trailer.
Reindeer in the desert?
Yeah.
Now, I've heard everything. Wow.
So I took them.
And you took them and where you just made them your own pets?
I brought them home and I got
them. Now, when you say home, where is home for how many were these a complete set of 8 reindeer?
This is when I was living in Sylmar, and there were 4.
Okay. And your home was in the country then?
No.
Did you have trouble with the city zoning commission?
Yes.
Oh, boy. This is an interesting move. This movie's almost more interesting than Born Free. That's
Well, it just was, you know, I saw them, and it was cruel what was happening. They had no water, and they were up in their own manure, up to their hocks. And so
So I
brought them home, took care of them, and they eventually went to the San Diego Zoo.
Okay. And then let's see. Okay, well, let's bring Lisa in. Lisa, you were just a little girl when you started traveling with your mom.
That's right, yeah. I could barely walk, but yeah.
Now, growing up, Lisa, was it just assumed that you were going to go into the same kind of work, or did you reach a point where you said, Mom, this is great, but I'm interested in doing something else? How did that work?
I've always been interested in animals and nature. I mean, I was raised out in the bush in Kenya for about 2 years. I lived with a few different tribes out there, and this was during when Nancy was working for Joy Adamson, and then we ended up living in the city, and it continued on. We would go out in, you know, all the game parks in Kenya, go out to Malindi, the coastal area, Mombasa. And, you know, I wanted to be a photographer. Then I wanted to be a nun at one point. I wanted to be a housemaid. I wanted to
Wow.
be anything that, you know, I came in contact with. I wanted to be a dancer.
So whenever you met some new person that did something interesting, you just wanted to kind of replicate that.
Yeah, I wanted to check it out. But I think, you know, animals and nature have been a very integral part of who I am. I mean, that is a life force to me.
Now, do you have siblings? Were your siblings and dad with you when you traveled with your mom, or was it just you and mom?
Just my mom and myself, yeah.
Okay. And if you don't mind me asking, what had happened to dad? Had he passed away, or was there a divorce? Or?
No, he's not. It's a divorce, yeah.
Okay, and that was when you were at a very young age. You were just a little girl at that time. Okay. Wow. So this is just fabulous. Well, now tell me, how did all of this, and either one of you can answer this, how did this all lead to Big Blend Magazine and Big Blend Radio? Explain to our audience exactly what these entities are.
All right, I'll do the business side.
Okay.
What happened is we left Kenya and we went to England for about a year and a half, and Nancy continued her work with World Wildlife Fund at that point and did a tour there for a year and a half. And then we came over to South Africa because we missed Africa, and England was a little cold for us, but we had a good time there. And we settled in like the north side of South Africa, Greytown, outside of Pretoria and that region. And after about, a few years, we did a year and a half, two-and-a-half-year tour around the entire country where Nancy sold her artwork. And the money went to the National Cancer Association. And she took me out of school for this at this point. So I went on the road with her again and learned a little bit about media in that, because you do learn about how to plot, how to write stories. You learn how to deal with people, write press releases, that kind of thing. And after that, she started a magazine in South Africa. And then after we left South Africa, we came back to the States, and after getting our feet back on the ground, we started the magazine together in San Diego.
And then is this both a hard copy and an online magazine?
This was 16 years ago. This is our 16-year anniversary, and we were The Blend magazine, and that was back in 97, and we covered North San Diego, and by the first issue it was Northeast, and we were also online about a year and a half after that, and then went to being, expanding to being Southwest Blend. And then after a few years, we went to be BigBlendMagazine.com. And then after that, we went into 10 magazines because we just kept getting too big.
So what kind of following do you, it sounds like a great following. How many average per month read your magazine?
If you go from our Big Blend magazines, that's our home base for everything. We have about 3.8 million unique visitors a month. Yeah.
Wow.
And then each magazine itself is over a million.
So what would be typical articles? Who are the writers that you solicit to give you content for this?
Well, actually, you know one of them, Henry Bernacki.
Fascinating travel writer.
Yes.
So is it just, are you mostly interested in people that travel to places with animals, or does this encompass any kind of traveling?
Any kind of travel, responsible travel.
Well, I've been to Disneyland. People. Does that count? Could I?
We're really focusing.
I've been to Israel too. Maybe I'll send you something more substantial than Disney.
Oh, Israel! That's awesome.
Okay.
Yeah, we love to cover Israel. We have 10 different magazines, so we have things from gardening to chefs who share their recipes.
Oh my goodness! Where do you find the time to do all of this? Are you both just saturated with this from morning till evening?
Yes.
But it sounds, I can tell you both love it, though. You're enjoying it. That is nice to be able to be a person that gets up in the morning and says, I can't wait to go to work. That is a blessing, isn't it?
It is, actually.
Well, now, these projects, I'm interested in this project where you want to visit every national park by the end of the centennial. Tell us about this and how people can get involved with this.
This really started, with the radio shows, actually, and as we just increased with our readership in the magazines, we started working with the National Parks Conservation Association, and they probably have like 4 to 5 interviews on our shows a month, and we started really noticing what was going on with the national parks in regards to budgeting. And with Nancy and I traveling a lot, we've gone to countless national parks. At the beginning of last year, we were in the Everglades, and this wasn't part of the tour yet. But you start to realize the issues that affect the parks that also affect the gateway communities, and it's vice versa. If funding goes away for our parks, then it hurts the communities. And we realize from all our travels that tourism is the cleanest dollar, especially responsible tourism, which national parks do attract. They attract visitors from around the world. And right now, we're looking at Congress cutting, again, a $200 million cut to our national parks. And our funding comes from our tax money. And it's a small, teeny-weeny, not even a percent of what we pay in taxes go to the national parks. Yet every dollar invested in a community, a gateway community's national park, $4 goes back into that community. That's the lowest. But it's actually averaging out places like San Antonio, the missions out there, the Everglades, different places. $20 goes back into that community, which essentially goes back to feeding a family.
Yeah, with all that we pay in our taxes, you'd think that we'd get some better usage out of them. And This is certainly one of the better ways that our government spends money on your national parks.
Mm-hmm. And actually, the parks are pretty much self-funding. If the parks were allowed to keep the money that they raised and just kept it to expand and fix up parts of the parks that need it, there wouldn't be an issue. The problem is the money that they make goes into the coffers and Congress decides how to spend it from there. And then the Parks Service has to ask for money back. So that's what the real problem is. If they just left the parks, you know, use the money they made themselves, there wouldn't be an issue.
Okay, so what can our listeners do about, I mean, I guess obviously write your congressman. Are there other things mm-hmm. people could do to help you in your financial endeavors?
Well, for us, it's not our financial. We want people to definitely.
That's right. You're bringing people to the parks, but it's certainly a cause you care about.
Yeah, we're doing that, and then we're also doing an education campaign as well to connect it. But really, it is about connecting with your congressman, your local representatives, especially your community, and even realize what you have in your backyard. It's very interesting. You're in San Diego. Our very first park on the tour is Cabrillo National Monument. Here we are in Tucson. We have the Juan Bautista Danza Trail. It's a National Historic Trail from the first Spanish explorers coming into this country. Going from Nogales into Tucson, up through Temecula, and part of San Diego up to San Francisco. And it's amazing. Here's this historic route. We're also trying to get the businesses, the local communities, to realize, hey, you've got this huge marketing opportunity to use this. You know, this is a way to get more people to your local smaller towns along the route, that kind of thing. So as a community, realize what you have as a national park. You know, make sure that they're funded. And that goes from, you know, talk to your mayors, all the way from your mayors all the way up to your Congress and senators and even the White House.
Yeah, that just sounds like a win-win for everybody because recognizing our national monuments certainly is a way to boost tourism and boost the economy.
Mm-hmm. Well, and when they say, you know, like we're looking now at the possibility of them closing 150 parks. And when they say that, you know, if you really think about it, how do you close a park? You can't fence it off. What they mean is they're just not going to take care of it.
Yeah, they mean they're just going to let it go.
Right, and that means anybody can walk in and not pay a fee. There won't be any rangers. That leads to vandalism, more wildfires, and basically they're taking jobs away from somebody who's already employed.
Yeah, about 9,000 to 10,000 park employees will be out of a job if this happens.
So to me, it makes no sense to take some money from a place that's making money, putting it somewhere else, and firing half the people that brought in the money and actually ruining something that actually works.
Yes, unfortunately, the decisions from bureaucracy usually do make very little sense.
Yeah, in this case, it really doesn't make sense.
Don't stop me on that.
And then you're talking about losing the heart and soul of this country, the beauty that we have. We're looking at historic monuments, our founding fathers' homes that are made into monuments. You know, who's going to take care of those?
How much time do the two of you spend visiting parks when it's not in a professional capacity, when it's just you personally wanting to go on vacation and get away from it all?
That is our main thing, you know.
I don't think we do anything that isn't connected to the magazines.
Yeah, I think everything, our whole life, kind of, we eat, drink, sleep, what we do.
And, well, okay, you know, now I see where the word big blend comes from, because it all just kind of blends together.
It's about quality of life.
There's no longer a disconnect between fun time and work time. It's just all life.
It's fun. To me, everything works in absolute harmony with this, because I think when you're doing something you truly love, I mean, there's people who say, oh, if you do what you truly love, eventually you're going to end up hating it. Well, then you truly don't love it. I think that this is like a heart and soul passion we've had for many years. And like the national parks, that's part of our country's, you know, that's our country. So I would call it the Spirit of America Tour. I mean, we started the national parks in this country. There wouldn't be all the other national parks in the world if it didn't start from here.
Yeah, and there's something about this that we need as human beings. It is a spiritual experience that you can't just put your finger on. I think we were mm-hmm. created in such a way that we just need this. We need the environment of the great outdoors. I just feel like a different person. And you've probably known this. The two of you have probably been camping a gazillion times more than me. But when I do go on a camping trip, Have you noticed that everybody's in a good mood? Everybody's smiling. Yeah. Everybody's saying good morning. It's not like walking through New York City downtown. It's a whole different experience.
Well, you know, there's also, you know, there's a lot of urban parks being started up, too. And you know, the flip side of this is we have new parks coming on board, which is really fascinating when you look at the budget issues. But it, you know, it's all about who wants to, hey, I put a new park in. And by the way, we're cutting your funding.
Yes.
You know,
we're closing five others, but here's a new one.
Yeah. But the urban parks, places like Santa Monica National Recreation Area, places like Cabrillo National Monument. You know, if you go to Cabrillo National Monument in San Diego, you're finding people. I mean, you've got a cemetery there, a military cemetery. You've got a military history. You've also got, you know, the national, you know, natural history. But people are using that to go jogging. There's that quality of life part of it. And I think there is a spiritual place, but you don't always have to go all the way to Yellowstone to get it in some of these parks. Some of the urban parks, you know, those offer that little respite that people need, and it's affordable.
Well, and that's wonderful that people do this. And then, of course, the Central Park in New York, too, because not everybody can get away to Yellowstone or Yosemite. So
right.
Now, Nancy, it says you were both an artist and a writer and a photographer. Where can people read some of your articles? And what I was going to ask you of the things you've drawn and photographed, what would be some of the pictures you're the most proud of, and where could we find them and take a look at them?
Wow, I haven't painted for a long time. I have some hanging right here.
the beauty of radio. Let's just get the camera focused right on that.
There we go.
What are you staring at right now? Be our eyes for us.
I paint a lot of lions. I like the cats. I really like it.
I've got to ask both of you, what kind of pets do you keep at home? This should be good.
We recently lost our babies, our Athena, and last year, and that was really the turning point when we said, well, we have no more children. It's time to go.
And what kind of animal was this?
A cat.
Mm-hmm. So you're more cat lovers than dog lovers?
Both. Oh, we love them both.
You love them both. I'm more of a cat lover, but I haven't found a whole lot of redeeming virtues with cats. They're stubborn and finicky, but I get a real kick out of them. Dogs seem to just love you unconditionally. They'll come up and they'll lick you, and they're never trying to sell you anything. They never have an angle. They're just the way we should all aspire to be. Cats are kind of like, when I'm in the mood, bub. But I have
they're
to admit,
babies,
I get a
that.
Very
they're
special babies. Kick out of cats. Yes, my cat at home thinks she's a princess. And
that's it.
I guess I'm such a sucker, I treat her like a princess, and she has every right to feel that way. I'm going to list some of the national parks that are my favorites, and I want to, let me ask you first what your favorites are before I get to my list, actually. What are you, each of you maybe list your two favorite national parks?
Well, Yellowstone is just, I could.
That one was on my list. What does she win, Don Pardo? Yes, Yellowstone. Yeah, we can't, who could not think of Yellowstone? Okay, Yellowstone, and what would be your other one?
We just went to Mount Rainier. Wow.
Oh, that's nice.
Beautiful.
That is beautiful. Yes, it is.
But then there's the Everglades, and that is so crazy.
Yeah, the Everglades. Yeah. Wow.
Now, alligators kind of creep me out, so I'm not sure I would like the Everglades as much. But
It's beautiful.
You know what they have, though? They have these things called chicky camps, and you can, it's like a big old jetty. You can actually go on a little boat, and you get up, and it's in the water. It's like a little jetty that you camp on overnight in the water.
Wow.
So you're surrounded by water and crocodiles and alligators.
Yeah. That's interesting. They have. I always heard that it was just alligators, but they have crocodiles in the Everglades also.
As well.
No kidding. I always thought you had to go to Australia or Africa to see a real crocodile.
You know, that's exactly what I thought until we went to the Everglades. We're like, what?
And manatees, they have
that. That's one of those. Okay, so those reptiles don't creep you out the way they creep me out, I guess. Okay.
No. And I have to say, I'm going to do a shout-out for the sequoias. The Sequoia National Park, we did that this year. And also Saguaro, which is our backyard here. We
can't
explore that, every week.
I don't think you can do favorites.
I suppose you can't. I know when I was a little kid, the very first place I saw was Yosemite. Mm. When I saw Yosemite Falls, they were the most breathtaking thing. Yellowstone was just fascinating with the geysers. I mean, remember, I guess, you know, you'd hear about the guy that discovered a Jim Bridger, and he'd come back and people just thought he was making up stories because he was describing a place so fantastic. It just didn't seem like it could be true. It was like he was describing heaven on earth.
It's kind of prehistoric.
Yeah, it is. And then, of course, with the... Now, do they still, these even these days, when I visited as a little kid, the bears would walk right up to your car and get on their hind legs and even twinkle toe along with the car. Does that still happen, or do people keep their distance a little more now?
They're pretty, you know, like even when we were in the Sequoias, they have you have to put everything in a bear safe, you know, container. Like, you know, don't leave food even in your cars, you know, because bears will smell it out. I mean, even
they're good.
Yeah, bears know. And it's the same in the Everglades. You know, remember,
but I think things have
not
changed.
The bears.
I think things have changed as far as I think the rangers are far more strict mm-hmm. than they used to be about people feeding animals.
Yeah.
Yeah, because people will do stupid things and then the poor animal gets in trouble for behaving the way an animal would.
Yeah, the rangers have become, you know, policemen effectively now. I mean, it's really become that. They can do CPR all the way to, you know, put your hands behind your back. You
know? Well, I guess they would have to. What was your experience seeing Crater Lake for the first time?
We haven't been there yet. Well, I have.
Oh my goodness! There's one you haven't been to.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh,
which one?
Yeah.
Okay, one of you was who saw it? Who didn't see it?
I haven't been there either.
Oh, neither one of us has been there.
Oh my goodness! Well,
we have a list.
We just started this. And,
well, you got to put that on. When I first saw Crater Lake, I thought I was staring at a picture postcard. It was just so beautiful; it didn't even seem real. How about Niagara Falls? Have you been there?
No.
Nope.
Now, that's a place where, you know, with all the movies where we've seen Niagara Falls, you know, you kind of think that when you visit a place, it's not going to live up to what you mm-hmm. were expecting. Niagara Falls was everything I imagined it to be and much more.
Cool.
It's just so awesome and incredible. Although I do wonder how many people discovered it and never lived to tell the story because the river goes through these rapids and then it goes around the bend and it hits this calm right before it drops over the big falls. So I'm just imagining those poor first explorers finally out of the rapids going, whew, clear sailing from here, and then they go around the bend and they look what's in store for them. You got to wonder, I'm guessing the first one that told the tale wasn't the first one that discovered it. There must be a people that never lived long enough.
Can you imagine now if they closed it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, or dammed it up. I mean, it's just... Now, how about, you know, you're both living in the Grand Canyon state, so I assume you have to have seen the Grand Canyon.
Yes.
Although I must tell you, I lived in Arizona for 2 whole years, and I never saw the Grand Canyon. And when I visited Niagara Falls, I stayed with people who lived 10 minutes from the falls, and they had not been to the falls in 16 years. So isn't it interesting what we take for granted?
Yes.
Both of you, give out your website again for Big Blend Radio and Big Blend Magazine.
The best place to go is BigBlendMagazines.com.
Okay, BigBlendMagazine.com. Nancy Reed and Lisa Smith, you're both delightful. You live a wonderful life, probably envious to a lot of people, but I think people could probably do a lot more of this stuff than they give themselves the time to. So kudos for both of you for making your lives count and for standing up for something as important as our national parks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us on your show, Bob.
Oh, it was my pleasure. We will see you next week, everybody.
The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.